Welcome to the Badass Babes of Entertainment. I'm Brenda Fisher.
And I'm Megan Katz.
And today's episode is a little bit different than our norm and a little off the beaten path. I am a huge true crime fan and listen to true crime podcasts, including Crime Junkie and Morbid, and love, love, love those ladies out there that are making it happen, some badass babes. And one of the things that I encountered recently is I watched an amazing limited series on HBO Max, and it really, really got to me, and I wanted to share some information about it. It's called I'll Be Gone in the Dark, and it was highly recommended to me from some of my clients, and once I watched it, it was just like so powerful. This is a story about the Golden State Killer and the search for him and a woman who took on almost like, I don't want to say a one-woman show because she had a lot of people helping her, but she was so driven to help put this monster behind bars, and she basically did just that, but she never got to see it come to fruition. She was writing a book with the same name, I'll Be Gone in the Dark. And so we want to give a big shout out to Michelle Eileen McNamara. She was an American true crime author. She was the author of the true crime book, I'll Be Gone in the Dark, One Woman's Obsessive Search for the Golden State Killer, and helped coin the name of the killer as the Golden State Killer. She was the one who thought of the idea of using 23andMe and creating a fake profile and putting in the Golden State Killer's DNA, because they had it, to try to find a family member that matched to see if they could actually figure out who he was. He had gotten away with, you know, many assaults on countless numbers of women. I think I want to say it was in the 30s, possibly 40s, the number of women that he attacked. But also, he attacked their husbands and boyfriends as well and murdered multiple people. She really deserves a huge, huge thank you from all of us out here for the endless hours of work and the life that she dedicated to finding him and putting him away. And she didn't live long enough to be able to see it happen. And her amazing husband, Patton Oswalt, continued her quest. And it's just an amazing series. You need to watch this. Just to show you how somebody so selflessly gave of themselves to help others and told the most amazing story. So a big shout out to Michelle McNamara, Patton Oswalt, her amazing husband, and their daughter. So today's episode, we're going to be speaking to a corrections officer who's retired that guarded serial killers in our California prison system, and we're going to get some interesting information, which I'm sure Michelle would have appreciated, as she was always a seeker of truth. So Michelle McNamara, rest in peace, girl. You are truly a badass babe.
Brenda Fisher, Talent and Literary Manager.
And I'm Jacqueline Reynolds, Chief Digital Talent Officer at RSA Entertainment.
Our podcast, Badass Babes of Entertainment, will discuss the entertainment industry and the challenges facing today's actors, influencers, brands, and content creators.
So you're kind of like Voldemort, the one we cannot name. And welcome to the Badass Babes of Entertainment.
Welcome.
And yes, we are very excited. So Megan Katz is my co-host today. And so, yeah, you've got both of us. And
we're two babes. That's pretty awesome.
that is.
All
right?
To yourself.
All to yourself. Imagine that.
Man. It's amazing.
So tell us. So you were a security guard, prison guard. What do you want to call your, I guess, CO, corrections officer?
CO would be appropriate. California, we're one of the few states that actually have peace officer status. So we have guns and we make arrests and all kinds of other things. So it's actually equal to police in our state.
Gotcha.
Well, that's cool. You guys are fancy.
Yeah, we actually are pretty badass, actually, in
there
California.
Which fits right with the Badass Babes of Entertainment. You got to be badass.
Is.
There you go.
Hand.
So what got you into that job? How'd you get your start?
Well, this is a really interesting story if you really want to know the truth.
We do. All the juicy details.
So, you know, California is a progressive state. At one time, it was not. It was a conservative state, but it was a certain lean politically to another color. During those times, everyone thought it was a good idea to have affirmative action, meaning that around after Rodney King, everyone pretty much wanted to start hiring more minority diversity type people. So they put restrictions on the types of people they would hire. Well, the state couldn't at the time participate in that. It was like federal, small municipal departments. So the Department of Corrections was the only people hiring those of white color. Therefore, that was the only way I could get into law enforcement at the time, as a stepping stone into the pathway. They did make that restriction.
Gotcha.
So they were, it's a really bad way of looking at it. I don't think people should be hired based on color. I think they should be hired based on qualifications.
Right. Agreed.
So that's where we're at, and that's how I kind of ended up corrections. It might actually be a better path for me, because it actually taught me how to deal with people, communicate without a gun, something I think most officers benefit from nowadays.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. Mm-hmm. So that leads me to the next question. So how did you end up guarding some of the most notorious serial killers in our history?
Well, the interesting part is when you first start, you got to pick a facility to work in. There's 34, 35 facilities. And it's not like you have a wide choice. They have a certain amount of openings and you put in for it. Sometimes when you choose it, it's already taken. So you sort of get leftovers. I had gotten leftovers. I ended up going to a place where no one really wanted to go. They're highly violent people, a lot of turnover, and that's where the openings were at. So I ended up at Corcoran State Prison, and then I also ended up transferring to Pelican Bay State Prison. Both of them had areas of the prison where people with very high stature are protected, or those who are unmanageable go, including those with full-blown AIDS that were very violent, trying to splash their AIDS-tainted blood in your eyes and get you infected because they hated being locked up and incarcerated.
That's scary.
So, that is scary.
This wasn't exactly the most, you know, they welcome you with open arms if you're dumb enough to sign up and go in.
Dumb enough.
Nice. Nice. So tell us about some of the people that you did guard and...
Name the names.
That's right. Spill some tea.
Well, I see there's a few out there that I'm probably people remember. Charles Manson.
Oh, mm-hmm. Yes. Little Charlie.
Little Charlie had an opportunity to hang out with him and then his
hang out with him. You
cell next door to him. The guy that lived next door to him was
lived
Sir
next
Hans
door.
And who was another big time guy, more or less a patsy. I'd probably call him more than a killer, but he got the other Kennedy, California.
Yikes.
When he visited LA. So those were the two high prominent ones I first were around. And then as time went on, I got to meet others like Richard Ramirez and the Menendez brothers.
Ooh.
To name a few.
So what was Richard Ramirez like?
You know, man, that dude has some nasty looking teeth and horrible breath. he was this really tall, dirty, slanky, stinky guy, and he would just sort of like look at you like he would look at you, but he wouldn't see you type thing. Almost like he saw through you. He was a interesting guy. I mean, I can only imagine what it would have been like for people to interact with him prior to him getting caught, having understanding of what he was doing. Very cold, ruthless guy. You know, it's amazing that they got him, but he didn't change one bit inside. You know, but he did get a stack, and I'm not even kidding. He got a stack of mail every day. He had women throwing themselves, and these weren't your typical non-babes of California. I mean, some of these girls were really good-looking women throwing themselves at this guy. So being famous does have its advantage.
So were you like reading his mail and checking out pictures, or?
We read the mail going out, not okay. necessarily coming in. I mean, it's screened coming in from another area through the mailroom. But as officers ourselves, we don't do the screening more or less. We do the screening when they go out at nighttime. So as the mail is collected on usually what they call the swing shift or second shift, the graveyard guys will go through the mail and spot check it and see if there's anything that may pertain to evidence or affiliation of gangs, and trying to get information to the security squads and other investigative branches that may be needing information.
Right.
So that's how that kind of happens. But most incoming mail is screened by a whole different entities. So, but yeah, he had some hotties. We just get a lot of stuff from inmate.com. When the internet first started,
I'm looking for a boyfriend. Is that where I should go?
Seriously. They would have a profile on inmate.com, and women would be like, oh, he's hot. You know,
what is wrong with you that you think, you know what, Brenda? Yeah. Bumble is not working out. Inmate.com.
You want a guy that's got a history of actually handling business, you know? So, yeah, I can only see where inmate.com will take you. Good qualifications, you know?
Yeah. And you're like,
good resume.
You're like, ladies, he's got terrible teeth and horrible breath. Why?
But
why?
He also kills people. Oh, yeah. That's said. Exactly. Like, you need therapy.
And imagine him having sushi with you.
What?
You know, I haven't brushed my teeth in a month, and I had some yellow hamachi.
Ooh,
give me a
gross.
Kiss.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to kill you after dinner? Like, no dessert?
I mean... No, I'll fillet you. Not kill you. I'll fillet you.
Worst date joke ever.
Right?
Little cannibalism never hit anybody.
Oh, my Lord.
Or it did.
Yeah. There you go. So, the Menendez brothers. Let's talk about the Menendez brothers.
Oh, my God. So, one of the cool things about being a CO, at least in this state, we can go down to the records and see the entire file on these guys. You get everything from the court transcripts to the photographs of the crime scene, all of it. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you wanted to be a person who wanted to do research and biographies and all that crazy stuff, or investigative journalism, or whatever call you want to call it, it's a good pathway to getting stuff. Get your hands on stuff. Like the Zodiac would have been really interesting if they would have ever caught that guy. But at any rate, I was very curious about these two guys, because when they came into my unit, I was working in an ADSEC unit, which is a little bit, it's not as hardcore as a SHU, but I was working in an ADSEC unit, which again is it's a controlled unit. It's segregation. And these two jackoffs were inside of there, and they were whimpering all night, you know. And these guys, these inmates, you know, they fish. That's the term they use, where they take strings they make out of bed sheets. And they get a lot of these pieces of strands of small little pieces of sheet, and they use a mug, a plastic coffee mug, so to speak, with a handle. And they tie up the cotton strings and they twist it to make these really strong ropes. And then they tie them together and make them very long. And then they take a piece of the shower shoe, they call it, which is basically a flip-flop with some weight on it, and tie it so they have like a heavy anchor. They flick this stuff. They put notes, coffee, and drugs and all kinds of shit in this stuff. So they're flinging this stuff under these guys' cell door. There's a good at least a half inch gap under that sucker, and they were getting death threats and stuff, so they're crying all night long. You know, so my experience is when someone does that, generally, psychologically, they're just sort of like, they know their asses are online. They're going to get it. They're going to get that ass taxed. They walk mainline or get out in the open, they're sitting ducks. So whatever they were being sent was threatening. So I managed to tool down to the records office, and pulled their file, and I wasn't prepared for what I saw. Generally, most people, most decent people, when it comes to at least their mother, the anger and rage isn't there enough for you to want to hurt your mother. Sort of like the one thing you don't do as a nasty criminal is go against the mom. That's the one person in your life that you're always loyal to. But not these guys. They absolutely destroyed her. The photographs, I'll never forget what they looked like. There was really much not left of her other than the lower part of her torso on the couch. But the fact that they unloaded shotguns into her, went back out to the car to reload and came back in, showed a very high sense of anger. It's just
That's
amazing
sad.
What That's I sad. Saw, you know, and it really put a lot of anger in myself when dealing with them, you know.
Yeah,
I bet.
But didn't they say, though, that their dad had abused them and that she didn't stop it? So maybe that was,
you know, I don't believe that shit based off what I read. The dad was, he was an immigrant to the country.
Mm-hmm.
He busted his ass and he became successful. And there's nothing wrong with trying to teach your kids the value from you coming from nothing and creating something of wealth and good mm-hmm. for your family. All he was trying to do was teach his boys, I'm not going to spoon feed you. You know, Lyle was kind of a shithead. You know, he was getting himself in trouble all the time, using drugs. You know, he wasn't exactly a great role model for his brother.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, the dad was just trying to discipline them and say, listen, man, I'm not going to give you the keys to the castle. You're going to earn this shit. And that's what boiled down to. And they resented him. They realized how much money he was worth. You know, and I'm going to tell you, people do some crazy stuff when it comes to
money,
wealth, and rich people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and
money cannot buy happiness, people.
That's the motive behind it, you know. And like, we're not going to get caught. We're pretty smart. We're college kids.
Yeah.
Yeah. At any rate.
That's well,
crazy. But it's sad. Yeah.
You saying that's interesting that none of them touch their mothers except for them. Is there anything else that you kind of saw like, oh, this is similar in all serial killers or the ones that you were watching?
No,
over?
They didn't have a common denominator trait, at least that I could pick up on,
mm-hmm.
other than highly manipulative women, which most of them are. But like if you take Richard Ramirez, for instance, he hated women, but he was a nasty type of guy who would kind of set them up. He used to like watch, he enjoyed the fear of people. Knowing that what he was going to do to him, he enjoyed that aspect of his ritual of killings. Whereas these two idiots were just, the motive was the money. But the mom was the one that wasn't going to let them slide. She wasn't going to let them just get whatever they wanted. The dad was adamant about, no, man, you need to support what I want to do and discipline these boys to set them straight because they're becoming a problem. So the mom took the wrath of that because they felt that maybe she betrayed them. But the abuse story, not buying it. It just, there wasn't, from basically what I've cited, there was nothing there to support that. I mean, there's, you know, they most of the criminals that I've run across, mainly the ones that are what they call 288s, which are child molesters, they always have an excuse for doing what they do.
Right.
And they always said, well, I was abused. Well, then you know what? Then why the hell would you do it for somebody else?
Yeah.
Knowing that what you went through, why would you repeat that cycle?
Yeah.
So, you know, I can't buy that story.
It also makes you wonder, back then they didn't have a lot of therapists and child psychologists and people to step in.
No, absolutely not. And I think too, at the time, parents were embarrassed. Mm. Parents were actually embarrassed to say, my kid has to go talk to somebody.
Yeah.
You know, whereas today, it's, I think, between the amount of wars our children have gone into, come back jacked up. I think it's been acceptable that people can have mental health issues. And it's okay to admit that. Because, I mean, if you look at some of our history of our families who have gone to Vietnam and they came back, they were ignored, you know, and they had to survive. And there was a lot of shame. They didn't deserve that. So it's good to see that mental health is being acceptable today. without actually being shamed for it.
Right.
Agreed.
So people might actually get help before things go off the rails.
Absolutely. I think everybody benefits from that. I think happy people are way better than miserable people. But anything to stop possible, you know, triggers,
right.
You know, is probably a good thing to, I'm big supportive of mental health. And I think everybody deserves equality in that fashion and to get help.
Definitely. Richard Allen Davis.
Oh, God. That one bothers me. That's Polyclasis Killer.
Yes.
This scumbag, there's one thing that COs and certain racial groups of inmates do not tolerate. You don't mess with children. You just don't. It's the only race of, so to back it up, California itself has four classes of race that they recognize when you're classified in the system. You're Black, you're white, you're Hispanic, or you're other. And for California to be so progressive, you would think of all the states that California would have the most progressive prison system, when actually the prison system that they've created is the most racial in the whole 50 state union. And what I mean by that is that whites bunk with whites, Blacks and Blacks, Hispanics and Hispanics. And sometimes you'll find a white and other, Hispanic and other, Black and other, or what they call a red bone, which is a albino Black with another Black. But sometimes there's some drama that goes with that shit too. And so with this kind of thing, the one race in the system that sort of gets a pass for messing around with children or raping women are Blacks. They sort of don't handle the business. But my God, if you're white or Hispanic and you do that shit to a kid, you're dead. You're dead man walking.
Wow.
You're not going to survive. You know, so
I wonder why that is.
Yeah. Why do you think that is?
It comes down to the history of the race and how they value family. They know exactly what happens when you do that to a child. You destroy their lives for the rest of it. They have no future. I mean, if you abuse a child sexually, that's it. You've ruined their life. And it's a cardinal sin. You don't do that. It's natural. It's built in knowing that it's wrong to do that. What, the Blacks don't do it? It's a good question. You probably should interview one.
Wow. That's...
They don't actually give me an answer. I've spent many times trying to probe them for information, and you know, it's all about getting over on somebody and shit like that. Just there's just a different type of group of people when it comes to family values.
That's really interesting. I never would have thought of that. I would think that they would be.
I didn't either. And like I said, being a CO itself inside the system, you see people for what they really are. Something you will not see. You see a fake facade out in the real world or on social media or wherever you interact with people. You don't see the real human being.
Wow.
But back to Richard, I mean, this guy should have been caught. There was a sheriff that ran into this guy on an old dark road and let this guy probably would have saved her life had he actually stopped, got out of the car, looked, because the word on the street was that was probably the point where she was murdered right then and there. So, you know, it's this guy, he was just a real piece of shit, you know.
So why didn't the sheriff do anything?
I just hate to see laziness, probably.
Yeah, I think I saw there was definitely on one of the ID channels or something, there was a documentary about it. And, you know, for whatever reason, I guess, you know, his story was, you know, checked out. He was saying something, oh, well, you know, I had a flat tire or I had something. And so he was like, oh, you know, I guess he didn't think to look, you know, or search the car or whatever. Or he didn't give off the vibes that he was being shady, which shocks me.
When you're a patrol, I was a reserve deputy sheriff myself, as well as a CO working for the state, to kind of give myself some street time and have some more fun outside. Because, I mean, being a CO isn't exactly a stellar position, you know.
Right.
You don't get a lot of human interaction of the public, sort of thing. You get to deal with the 1%.
Right.
I want to deal with the other 99%. So I'd go out and do reserve policing and try to get some experience and see if I like the taste of the street versus, you know, the custody side. And I will tell you, practice due diligence. You know, when you're out down the streets, you got to take, when you find somebody on an abandoned road and they got a flat tire, triggers should go off in your head thinking this is a bullshit story. Like, you just know that it doesn't sound right. So maybe taking a once or two look over wouldn't hurt, but this individual couldn't be bothered. I hope today that this deputy feels the wrath and the guilt till the day he dies for allowing that to happen, because he should have known better. Don't tell me there were, you work custody, there's bells and whistles that go off in your head to say, this doesn't sound right, you know?
Right.
It was abandoned road. It wasn't a public street. It wasn't your typical driving down the street. There's a guy on the side of the road. I mean, that wasn't it. This was a very desolate area.
Yeah, and you have to wonder, like, why wasn't he asking? Why is this guy out here? He doesn't live out here. He has no reason to be here.
Maybe he wanted to go Code 7, go to lunch. Who knows?
Yeah.
But I'm sure, I hope it's eating him up now.
You know, I would think so. You think about that, you know, it's your, you know, not your fault. You're not the one who took her and killed her, but you could have saved her. And the fact
you could have saved her life, and that's your job. I mean, your job is to protect people. That's the oath you take when you become a peace officer in the state of California, is protect the people. Fuck the property. Property can be replaced. What are you got insurance for?
Right.
But the people, they cannot be replaced. And you serve the people.
Good point.
You serve them to the best of your ability, and you do your work, and you have integrity with that work. And it's your job to make sure that anything that doesn't look right, investigate it. You know, it's different too. The policing style between Southern California and Northern California are totally different.
How so?
California is multifaceted. You've got Central, Northern, and Southern. Southern California is probably the fastest lifestyle of all the states next to, say, Manhattan, downtown New York, you know, city. You get up to Central Cali, it's totally quiet. You get up to Northern Cali, it's really quiet. But they don't have the experience. They don't have the interaction of people like you do in Southern California. You certainly don't have the interaction with more of the criminal side than you do down here. So I think based off the training, they just aren't equal. And I'll say that because I've seen it with my own eyes. You know, it's not an opinion.
Right.
And I'm sure the main people will be listening will have a different opinion. That's fine. Yeah. They can go fuck themselves. But I've seen it myself, my own eyes. I'll back that up all day long.
Right.
You know, it's just, there's a different style of policing. There's different style of people.
Yeah.
Let's not forget that Rich Ramirez was up in San Francisco.
Yeah.
You know, and they didn't even know how to deal with him. So, yeah, it is what it is.
Wasn't it people from Southern California that went up there to get involved with it, too? Weren't there cops from here?
Probably, because I know they did. San Francisco had a really weird history, like, between Southern California and in New York or San Francisco itself. Because if you go back to, like, looking at the Zodiac, you know, it was the same dealio where the cops down here were a little bit smarter than the cops up there, and they kept kind of blowing this shit off. But I don't know. I know there's a documentary on the Ramirez guy. I've never seen it.
Yeah.
I kind of stay away from that kind of crap because, you know, not my thing.
I watched it. It was interesting. Like, I did learn some things that I didn't know before. But the most horrible thing about his story was, like, he took a 12-year-old girl and raped and killed her. It was like, you know?
Yeah, he could not walk even a shoe yard without the threat of being killed, because the Southern Mexicans, or what they call Serranos, M.A., they are the leaders of the prison. Of all the prison gangs in the system, they are the most notorious, ruthless, most organized group of people, and they don't play that shit. And how that man survived without getting killed was an act of CO's protecting his ass and the system protecting his ass. But they should have just kind of let him walk around on the shoe yard, and they would have taken his ass out. He would have saved the taxpayers hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Wow.
You know,
no,
he didn't deserve to breathe after molesting those little girls.
Yeah.
And that's my opinion.
Well, and it was like they were protecting him just so they could kill him later. I don't get it.
No, California hasn't killed an inmate. I don't know how long, and they're not going to. Again, and then they politically flip themselves onto a side saying it's okay for you to kill people, but we're not going to kill you. So what sort of like, how does that stop somebody from wanting to kill somebody when they know that there's nothing to worry about? I think the biggest fear that a murderer has is knowing that his life will be taken. So if you have that in place and you accelerate it, one of the biggest cons of the state is the fact that they get appeals on two levels. And it's bullshit. What they really did in California to make it worse is they get appealed every single count. So if you've got a multiple set of murders you did, you can go through the whole appeal process on both levels and never end up getting executed. Federal system isn't as forgiving, so to speak. If you take the guy that, the Unabomber guy, and the guy that blew up Oklahoma City, you know, those guys kind of ran out of time real fast, you know. So it is what it is, you know.
It's interesting. John Stenson.
Leader of the Aryan Brotherhood, or at one time was. When they built the SHU program, which is Security Housing Unit, the idea was to take all these leaders like John Stenson and those, the Morenos, and all these guys that were running the Mexican Mafia, Black Guerrilla Family, Nuestra Familia, these hardcore prison gangs, and separating them, taking the leadership and locking them up so they couldn't communicate down to the soldiers. That was the basis of having the SHU program and giving them what they call an indefinite SHU program, meaning that there was no actual fixed time to how long they'll stay. So it's just trying to remove the threat. And they did a very good job. It pretty much inhibited the AB from any progression whatsoever. It just cut their legs right off.
Wow.
But he was actually quite respectful. Never really had a problem with him. Did exactly what he's told to do and what they consider a programmer. You know, but like anything else, he still had blood on his hands. Just like Tukey Williams. And everybody painted this guy as he was such a great guy building all those children's books. But if anyone actually looked at his real crime, what he did, I mean, Godfather of the Crips, man, this guy was a ruthless killer. You know, it's funny how people will politically paint somebody to make them look better than they are. And that's how the state is kind of looking at criminals, man. And look what they're doing with the laws. They're actually changing them to make them, I don't know, less threatening, well, raising the bar, got to do more to be locked up type thing. I don't understand the basis behind that.
Yeah, it's a little scary. So,
it's a little scary right now. You know, we're a laughing stock of the union.
I don't know. I think Washington State might have us beat.
You mean Oregon?
Oh, I was thinking of like Seattle. They're doing some weird stuff too.
Well, not as bad as what Oregon's on every freaking drug to be legalized.
Well, they're doing that in Washington now, too.
Oh, good God.
Mm-hmm.
Washington used to be a really beautiful place to go to. You know, you never would have really thought that Washington, Oregon, or California would have been the cesspool of what they've become. I mean, it's sad for those who really love the areas that they grew up in to have to deal with this. It's not fair.
No, that I absolutely agree with, that people shouldn't be able to live however they want to live when it's disrespecting, you know, the community they live within. That to me is
You want your community to grow in a positive way as generations come behind you. I mean, that's the whole point when you have it with your family, you know, and if you are lucky enough to stay where you were raised and have your own family there, you want to share like, here's where we used to be here in this community, and now we're here.
Mm-hmm.
Look at all the growth. Look at all this awesomeness. But there's still this little patch of history right here from when I was a kid. I can remember this, this, and that. You know, that's what it seems like in the Midwest, but you come out to the West Coast, all shit's broken loose out here, you know, and it's just sad. It's a sad state of affairs in today's situation. And then you add COVID to the whole, you know, scenario. That just throws another layer of crap that people got to deal with. But
yeah,
I'm really not too happy to say I'm from California, let alone where I was raised. So it's embarrassing.
So let me ask you this last question. Lester Eubanks.
I don't recall actually having an interaction with this guy.
Well, you haven't. You haven't, because he fled from Ohio back in the 70s, and the word out there is that he has been living here in LA. They tracked him to like their Gardenia area. And he has been on the run for almost 50 years, and he raped and murdered a 14-year-old girl, and he was he was supposed to be on death row.
Mm-hmm.
They let him out to go on an unsupervised shopping trip around the holidays because he had been such a model inmate for the time he was there.
That'd be shitting me.
No, story. It was on America's Most Wanted back multiple times back when John Walsh was hosting, and now Elizabeth Vargas just ran it again with the new series that's out, and he is out here and no one has turned him in. He's an African,
like Whitey Bulger, but he was living out in LA for...
He was living in Santa Monica forever, going to the beach, living his best life. And and Lester Eubanks, now in his 70s, they said he's like 77 years old, and they still haven't captured him. And that just kind of goes back to what you said before about the fact that the African-American community, you know, doesn't seem to, really,
they protect their own people. Yeah. I mean, they don't sort of like call them out and say, hey, we've got a certain standard that we're going to abide by. It's not about that. It's all about getting over on the next person. How you do it doesn't matter. Play the game, man. Play the game. That's all they care about.
And that's just kind of surprising to me, especially out here in LA. You would think that people would notice him or know of him and want to turn him in, and nobody
has. Well, I tell you, it's not hard to change identity. I mean, you know, you could shave your head and look like a completely different person. You could... And now with all the things with Botox, I mean, you can take a 70-year-old man and make him look 50. You give him a couple shots of Botox and, you know, do some other cosmetic modifications, and you'd be surprised, you know, lose some weight. It's really hard to really identify people, especially when you don't have updated photographs, you know. But more likely, too, he's probably being protected. You know, there's probably somebody out there knows who the hell this guy is, and they're R-rating him. I mean, there always seems to be, at least from history that I've seen, there's always some kind of caveat, you know.
Something.
Well, someone's getting supported somehow.
Yeah, the word was that his father had worked somewhere in law enforcement, and in fact, at one point... speaking to David Messmore from Ohio, who had been a captain before he retired, said that at one point they were showing him in the prison system like he was there and he was incarcerated, and he wasn't. He was on the run.
Wow.
So how does that happen? You know, unless
that
someone
takes a high level of political involvement to pull that shit off. Because
that's what I'm thinking.
I mean, you can't take a guy out of jail and just count him. There's a lot of people involved to pull that off, from the level of the officers into the supervisor roles of sergeants, lieutenants, and captains, to the administration roles of associate wardens and wardens and all kinds of stuff. Not to mention at the state level of those who actually run them, whether they're a director or whatever their title is of that Department of Corrections they're working for. Unless they're a privatized system, maybe they have an opportunity to do that. But you got to have some serious juice cards to pull that shit off.
Well, the other thing I was thinking is, like, you know, you don't just rape and murder somebody and then stop. Usually, once they get a taste for that, it's going to happen again and again. So if he hasn't been caught,
that, it gets worse.
Yeah,
how they do it. You know, it's just not repeat rinse cycle. It's I'm going to step it up.
Right.
You know?
So I wonder how many unsolved cases around here might be him, or if other people, you know, are going to jail because of his crimes.
Well, it wouldn't be the first time that people were, you know, falsely accused of a crime that they never committed. I mean, that still happens. Anybody who thinks it doesn't live in a rock, under a rock. I mean, yeah. It's...
Even with DNA. System,
yeah, our legal system is the greatest in the world, but it ain't perfect, but it sure is way better than, say, South Africa.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's still going to be instances where people be falsely accused, whether or not they got DNA and other kind of evidence, but it's unfortunate that anybody would do time for something they didn't do, and especially when it comes to messing around with abuse of children. I mean, it's sick. You know?
It is. And it's so sad that, you know, now we have to be so careful. And anytime I see a kid that is by themselves out on their bike or their scooter, and I'm like, where are your parents? You know, it freaks me out because I just know in a heartbeat.
But,
they
you know,
be
when
gone.
I grew up, I didn't have that. When I grew up, I was an 80s kid.
Mm-hmm.
A Reagan baby. That's what I call myself. And I can tell you, growing up by the beach, I used to ride my bike from the time at 7 o'clock in the morning. I wouldn't come back until damn streetlights were on. Yeah. I'd ride my bike to the beach. I'd ride my bike to the park. I used to ride my bike to a strawberry field that had a makeshift BMX track at it. I didn't have the worries of people trying to kidnap us, and traffic wasn't as bad. You didn't have all the distractions, you know, and honestly, Southern California and the beach cities weren't so congested. Life was different.
Yeah. Well, there you have it, folks. It's like, pay attention to your kids because
because
it's not getting any better.
No one's protecting them. No one's going to protect them for you.
Nope. Agreed.
And it's your job as a parent to make sure that your next generation survives and is raised properly.
Yeah.
And to achieve something better than what you've achieved is the end goal, better quality of life.
Yep. We certainly have, you know, all the bells and whistles and technology and things to make a better life. Now it's, you know, can we keep our kids safe enough, you know, so that they can do that?
Yeah. And sometimes, though, that there's kids out there that don't have a chance because their parents aren't involved.
Yep.
You know, and that's an unfortunate thing. Again, goes by with family values and all that good stuff. So
yeah, it's heartbreaking for sure.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, thank you so much. I know we've taken a lot of your time and you've got things
thank
to do.
You.
Yeah, this was like, I wouldn't say uplifting, but definitely interesting.
I'm an interesting person, more so than the Dos Equis character, but
yeah. Oh Lord.
It's always good to talk to some people about my experiences in life. Most people don't ever want to hear about the small guys in the world, you know, but
yeah,
it's been
definitely.
An interesting run. It has been, but I thoroughly enjoyed being on your show. So
yeah,
thanks
thank
for
you.
The invite.
And, thank you for talking to us and giving us some insight into some of these interesting people you spent some time with. And, yeah,
I think everybody should owe it to themselves to spend some time with some of the most notorious people in the world. Builds character.
Definitely does something. And I'll be making sure that I have my stun gun and my mace ready before I go to my car tonight. Thanks for that.
Yeah, I recommend Fox brand pepper spray, 5.3 shoe. It's the hottest thing out there and it does work.
There you go. Thanks for that. We'll make sure that everybody
well,
knows.
Probably you badasses of ladyism.
Yeah,
ladyism. I love it. Well, thanks so much for tuning in to the Badass Babes of Entertainment. I'm Brenda Fisher.
And I'm Megan Katz.
We'll talk to you next time.
Bye.
Ciao, ladies. Bye-bye. Bye.
This episode was produced by me, Brenda Fisher, and Jacqueline Reynolds.
also produced by Megan Katz. Recording and editing by Herman Villacorta.